This is The Beat, a conversation about the Charleston County Sheriff's Office and our community. I'm your host, Oshie Alford. Hello again and welcome to The Beat. I am your hostess, Oshie, and with me I have...
Your favorite Sheriff Graziano.
Sheriff Graziano, my favorite sheriff. I am a little bit biased, though. It is the third day of fall, my second cup of coffee. Which one are you on?
Two.
Two?
Yeah.
Okay, we're two coffees in and we're ready to go ahead and get started. So it's my understanding that the race towards being a informed sheriff is never finished. So you went on a couple of workshops recently. Do you want to tell us about those?
2 weeks ago, we met with the Barbara Bush Foundation here in Charleston. They convened about 11 national organizations that involve folks that are trying to reduce illiteracy in the country for adults. And then several nonprofits and also the mayor's office, Mayor Tecklenburg's office on adult and families and the libraries here locally. Mm-hmm. We met at the Chamber of Commerce and my part of being there was they really wanted to talk about what we've been doing in the detention center to do our part. Mm-hmm. To reduce illiteracy. So they took a tour the day before of the new education unit and then came back the following day. We convened and talked about what we're doing. A lot of their focus is reducing or increasing literacy for those that are incarcerated because there are significant economic impact that it can have on our local economies as well as our national economy. So that's what we did. We convened last Friday, and then they invited me after that to a Senate briefing. Mm-hmm. Up in D.C. So it was last week on Thursday. So I went up for the Senate briefing, and really we got a national recognition on what we've done to reduce or help in building the literacy skills of those incarcerated. Mm-hmm. And it was really just a validation, that we're moving in the right direction.
I actually didn't know we were going to be talking about this today, but genuinely yesterday in my free time when I'm not here, I was watching some videos and they were talking about there's some middle school teachers that were talking about that their students are reading so far below grade level. And that's outside of, our jurisdiction, obviously. But, that's not only a nationwide issue. You go through the comments, it's worldwide. There's people like, oh, we're having the same issue in Puerto Rico. We're having the same issue in the Caribbean. So it's interesting to see that we're doing our part to help fix that in the detention center. But you were telling me earlier, all the kids in the detention center are at grade level, right?
Yeah, that wasn't the case a couple years ago. So 2.5 years ago when we came in, we did have school in there, but they weren't getting seat time. So they weren't getting credit for that education. And there was optional whether they wanted to go to school or not. They mm-hmm. didn't have to go to school. If they wanted to stay in bed, they were allowed to stay in bed. Well, that stopped when mm-hmm. I walked in the door. And our focus really was now motivating them, getting them up to grade level and making sure that we are providing the same level, if not more, level of service to them through teaching and instruction. So I requested more teachers. I requested a principal from the school district. They did that. They gave that to us. And now everybody is on grade level or ahead of grade level. We have a librarian that comes in once a week. And that's just in the juvenile side. So we took that program and we kind of duplicated it. Because, let me give you some stats. 43 million adults in the U.S. Adults. These are 18 to 74. Nearly one in five have below a third grade reading level. Many of those folks, many of them end up in our facility. Mm-hmm. Low literacy really lies at the core of multi-generational cycles of poverty, of poor health, of low education, and attainment, and then preventing millions from fully engaging in society, good jobs, parents, workers, mm-hmm. Just contributing to society. So we had to figure out a way to do our part, mm-hmm. To reduce that gap, break that cycle of generational poverty. Mm-hmm. And so we duplicated that at the adult side, and that's what we were recognized for. in the work that we're doing and doing our part is what brought Barbara Bush Foundation to us mm-hmm. and said, you know, how can we help?
I mean, unfortunately, a jail exists for a reason. We need it, right? So we're taking these people who are being incarcerated for whatever various reasons, and instead of just having them serve their time and sit around and do nothing, stagnate, we're helping them achieve something, get further than something, and hopefully solve the problem in the long term to where we don't have a repetition of them coming back or their family coming back or anything like that.
Former First Lady Barbara Bush said literacy is the great solvable problem of our time. Mm-hmm. It is a solvable problem. There is absolutely no reason that we can't give people access to the opportunities to lift them out of poverty, which lifts them out of the potential of being involved in the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. And we do that, we're doing it through solving the problem of literacy.
Right. Well, you have more stats, and these are going to be, we're going to attach a link as well, so you guys can read them for yourself. But tell me a little bit more about the stats of the benefit of increased literacy in adults.
So the numbers don't lie. This is what was staggering to me as a business person. If you look at the numbers for our economy, mm-hmm. the problem with the adult illiteracy in our country, if we solved it, has an impact of $2.2 trillion annually in the gross national product. $2.2 million. The tax benefit, if we were to educate and get, say, 400,000 people to get their GED, mm-hmm. would have a $2.5 billion impact, positive impact on the economy. We're going to do that. Nationally, we're going to do that. But in Charleston, we're not going to do 400,000 because I don't hope I never see 400,000 people in the detention center. But we're going to do our part. I have an average 1,000 to 1,100 at one time. If we just had a small impact on half of that, that's your workforce. That's your future workforce that so many employers right now are struggling mm-hmm. to get people in the doors, to keep the doors open. And this will allow the folks that complete their education and you know, go from illiterate to literate, understanding that they now have this whole broad range of careers now that opens up to them. Mm-hmm. The digital literacy gap was even more staggering. Mm-hmm. Digital literacy is the foundation. Right now, it's everything we do.
So what is digital literacy?
So it's the ability for folks, it's the digital racial gap. So it's the ability for folks to be able to comprehend and do jobs that require the use of digital media.
Oh, okay. So like we're talking Microsoft, Excel spreadsheets, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when you talk about the racial literacy gap, when it comes to digital literacy, people that are black or brown communities, 78% of black Americans fall short of that 78% of the jobs out in the country. 78% of the jobs that are available right now mm-hmm. are digital jobs. And then in Hispanic Americans, it's 62%, but it's staggering. 46% mm-hmm. when you go to other races, but the disparity is there. Mm-hmm. So doing our part to reduce that gap or close that gap is really, it's going to make our community stronger. It's going to put people in these communities that earn a wage that they can sustain and support a family on.
So it benefits the people themselves,
yes.
their families,
yes.
our economy. I mean, I've yet to see a con personally, but maybe that's just me on the inside looking in. So I know that you did another workshop outside of the literacy, which I could genuinely talk about all day. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's staggering. And I think doing our part and to be recognized. So when I went to the Senate briefing, after the Senate briefing, Senator Graham and Senator Scott's staffers came up to me to get more information. And I said, you know, the best thing I can tell you is please reach out, but have them sign on to this, because this is a nationwide problem. Mm-hmm. It's not going to stop. And right now, I think there were 11 senators at that particular meeting. Senator Collins and Senator Reid were the two big champions, but mm-hmm. but they were just blown away that we were able to, do what we're doing at a very small level, but yet still have an impact. Mm-hmm. And it brought attention to the need to get more education programs. They asked me, why don't more sheriffs do this in their jails? And I said, maybe they want to. Maybe they don't have the funding. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's no desire. I don't know. But we're doing it. Mm-hmm. And if we can do it and be successful, so can everyone else.
Well, I mean, everything, like anything that is going to make a difference, you have to start small. You have to start somewhere. So I'm happy to see that we're starting and we are making a difference.
You just have to start.
That's true. So, okay. The other workshop you did was what, FJP?
Right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I have been involved with this group for a little over 2 years. It's called Fair and Just Prosecution. And it brings together local elected prosecutors as part of a network, and sheriffs as part of a network of leaders, mm-hmm. Committed to promoting a justice system grounded in fairness, equity, compassion, and obviously fiscal responsibility. And they have we have a vision of this shared vision for safer and healthier communities. And that's kind of why we come together. They bring, I think it was about 24 of us, maybe from across the nation, from mm-hmm. Massachusetts to Ohio, to me, South Carolina, and even North Carolina, some friends of ours to the north, working together to fix this, mm-hmm. and sharing policies and practices that work, engaging one another, challenging one another, mm-hmm. and it was my power pill for the weekend that I needed. Came away from it knowing that, you know, there's very few of us doing the work at a local and national level, but I felt supported and validated for the work we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so you guys are building each other up. You're testing the waters. You're questioning each other because, I mean, unfortunately, everybody hates the devil's advocate, but it's necessary if you really want to get to the heart of some concerns and some issues that we're going to have with new policies.
Right. So they build this, this is really an opportune moment for change. Mm-hmm. And we have been working on this for a couple years. Some sheriffs and prosecutors are a little probably ahead of where we are in some instances, but really haven't even thought about doing the things we do here, mm-hmm. or are doing it at a different level. We really got to talk about mental health, and that was mm-hmm. a huge challenge and a huge topic of conversation the entire day. It was one full day of just addressing the mental health issues and how our jails have become the de facto, they call it dumping ground for mental health. And I'm conflicted. I do believe people in mental health do not need to be in our facility, but there's some that get better care. Mm-hmm. And because our system's broken when they're with us. So I'm conflicted. I don't want them there. They don't need to be there. But at the same time, we're doing the work that nobody else is. We're filling in the gaps mm-hmm. that nobody else is willing to do. And that's a state issue. That's a country issue, really.
I mean, it's an ongoing issue that we discussed before because, I mean, with illiteracy, also an ongoing issue. Mental health, also an ongoing issue that is only increasing with time if we don't do something to stop it.
Yeah.
So I am glad to know that you had your power pill for the week, that you feel motivated and to continue with this ongoing struggle, really, with the education in the jail, with the mental health in the jail, and outwards.
We know we're heading in the right direction, and I feel real validated, and I feel energized now.
I think it's the weather. It was cooler earlier this weekend, so maybe...
Call it the weather. It's all of that.
Okay, well, sure. All right.
It was cooler up in D.C., but I come back to home, and it was a great week.
Okay, maybe really it was the workshops, week. Too. Maybe that helped, but thank you again for coming in and speaking with me on this fantastic Monday that we're all so excited about to jump back in.
Yeah.
And we'll catch you guys next week, and we'll talk about something else. I don't know what it is yet, but okay. We'll get there.
Thanks, Hosh.
Thank you. This has been The Beat, a conversation about the Charleston County Sheriff's Office and our community. I'm your host, Oshie Alford. Look for future episodes by following the Charleston County Sheriff's Office on Facebook, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.